Bam.
Bam?
We're back. Bam.
Yay! Yay! 2 weeks in a row this time.
And none of us got punched in the nose and broken our faces at a wrestling event, so that's good.
God damn it. I was just talking about the logistics of that with Cal. Holy crap. My wife, Kelly, by the way. Yeah, I think I can run through a very quick version of it. Even if you're not a wrestling fan, kids, go ahead and look for Becky Lynch punched in face during a brawl last night on SmackDown. Becky Lynch got inadvertently punched by another wrestler named Nia Jax. Oof. Now, to Nia Jax's credit, I want you, Jamie, to understand something. Becky Lynch is not very large. She is a rather slender woman of a very athletic build. She's very capable. She's a professional wrestler.
Yes.
I've seen her do barn burner matches and commit acts of athleticism that I absolutely could not do.
Yeah, she's
so
amazing.
With that said, Nia Jax, the other professional wrestler, her build, height, and weight, to give you comparison, is 6 foot tall and 275 pounds.
Oh, yes.
Now, by wrestler math, that means she's probably 5'10" and maybe 245. Now, for anyone playing at home who's met me in person, I am currently walking around at 5'10", 245. So imagine me punching an athletic woman in the face. And then, big surprise, what happens?
Crack, crack.
Yeah, split open, and it is an impressive thing to watch.
Yeah.
If you are adjacent friends to anyone who's a wrestling fan on Twitter or Instagram or basically anywhere, this is what they're going to be talking about. You may want to educate yourself just to be able to keep up in conversation.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to get too far down the rabbit hole, but yeah, to give you a real size comparison for anyone who's actually met me in person, that's Nia Jax.
Yeah.
And equally impressive in her own right for very different reasons. But yes.
Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I saw the aftermath. It was like, oh my God.
Oh, yes.
All right, Brandon. Well, what are you geeking on the week before Stuff Your Face Day?
Jamie Noguchi, you know what temperature is in my house right now? Or at least, actually, in this room, I should say. In my basement office.
69 degrees?
No. Keep going down.
Oh, 59 degrees?
Keep going down.
30 degrees?
Not quite that much. Hello, kitty. Hi, kitty.
Trinket's come to podcast with us.
Yay! So, Jamie Noguchi, it is currently 51 degrees in my office right now.
Oh my God.
You may ask, Brandon, why is it 51 degrees?
Why is it 51 degrees, Brandon?
Because my fucking furnace is broken, Jamie Noguchi. That's why.
You should not be geeking on your furnace broken.
Hang on a second. There's a light at the end of this tunnel, because unlike most of the friends that you end up hanging out with or people that you see on the internet, I am not going to be bitching about my fucking 51-degree office. You know why, Jamie Noguchi? Because tomorrow, the fine people who I am not getting a sponsor from, but I will absolutely rep the hell out of, at Blue Dot, a local Maryland HVAC company, are coming out to do the work. And they're doing it warranty style, because
Whoa.
They are a licensed, reputable dealer for the carrier machine that I have in my house. Now, the plus side is that means that the $700 board that went up and also all of the labor is getting 100% covered. Yep.
That's awesome.
Yes, so I now get to avoid a multi-$1,000 bill, and I'm a happy boy.
That's so good.
Kids, if I can tell you anything, if it comes to a car, if it comes to a large piece of equipment that you're going to be relying on for a lot of years, buy the fucking warranty.
Get that warranty, son.
Get that warranty. I'll tell Best Buy to go pound sand on anything $1,100 or less. if you're really spending a fair bit of money on it, you buy an Apple laptop, buy that fucking AppleCare. You get yourself an iPhone that you're going to be carrying around everywhere, buy that fucking AppleCare.
Oh, yeah.
But for some of the shit, fuck it. Don't worry about it. Yeah. But, yeah. Get that warranty, son.
Awesome.
Because I am geeking out about the fact that... That is probably the best phone call I've ever had. Is I literally, like, I called them today and I was like, hey, just wanted to verify you guys are coming. And I hadn't gotten an estimate on the labor and everything. And she was like, yeah, I don't see any numbers here either. She's like, let me call my people. I'll find out. I'll call you back. I was like, cool. So I get a call back about 2 hours later. A lovely lady named Michelle, I believe her name was. She was like, so I have good news. And I was like, okay, lay it on me. She's like, it's completely covered. And I literally, like, I'm in the warehouse where I work, you know, I've got other people around, and I couldn't help myself. I was like, I'm sorry, can you repeat that? Because I swear the fuck out of nowhere you just told me that everything was covered. And she started laughing. She was like, yes, sir, it is. And I was like, okay, my brain's skipping a beat. Get the fuck out of here. Say it one more time for the people in the back. It is 100% covered. She goes, 100% covered, parts, labor, front to back.
So cool.
And I was like, you know what? I should really be sending y'all an edible arrangement. I know you're just doing your job, but God damn it, you deserve a little appreciation from time to time. And she started laughing. She was like, well, I'm really glad I managed to make your day. She's like, everyone else in my dispatch office right now is staring at me wondering why I'm laughing. And I was like, feel free to tell them exactly what I said. Every profanity-laced word of it, and she started laughing. She was like, I'm sure I will once everyone else is off the phone. So, yeah, the fine people at Blue Dot are taking care of me. Thank you to Carrier for at least warrantying your shit if you're going to end up making an inferior product. I don't know if it's inferior. The board just straight crapped out on me on Saturday.
That's great.
Yeah, like, I, you know, wife and I are hanging out in the living room. I was like, it's getting a little chilly in here. What's going on? And I look over, and I'm like, it says that it's 61 degrees in here. That's not right. And I go to check the thing, and I'm like, that's super not right. So, yeah.
Winter is coming, brother.
Yep. So they came out on Saturday. They're refunding my service fee for coming out on Saturday because it was all warranty work to come look at it. So they came out on Saturday at 9 o'clock at night.
Nice.
To come look at it. Let me know what was going on. Got everything set up and everything taken care of. So, yeah. I can say with confidence, the fine people at Blue Dot are taking care of me. So, thank you. So, awesome. That is what I'm geeking out
about.
That
is awesome.
Yep. Yeah. For once, fucking something positive going on. I'm not. Yeah. 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 Usually, when I hop on here, I'm like, hey, everything's terrible and I'm covered in water. Like, yeah. What was it? 2 weeks ago when I had toilet water spilling out of my ceiling?
Yeah.
Home ownership, kids. It's a thing. Catch it. Yeah.
That's great.
Anywho, Jamie Noguchi, what are you geeking out about, sir?
well, Brandon, because I apparently think I sleep too much, I decided to learn a new program. There's a whole suite of 3D programs called CAD, computer aided design, or whatever, and it's what engineers use and mechanical designers and people who make actual products.
Yeah, it's what Sally Struthers used to push during the day during TV ads and stuff like that.
Yeah. And the difference between CAD and what I usually do with 3D sculpting, it's like the difference between vector and raster. So like what I do is sort of like the 3D version of Photoshop, you know, just you draw on the thing, you zoom in, it looks all pixelated, whatever. CAD is Illustrator. So instead of drawing a line, you use math to describe a curve. So with CAD and programs like it, you can use math to describe surfaces and curves and shapes and things like that. And the advantage of this is you can send those programs over to a milling machine, and the milling machine will take that information and cut steel or cut whatever.
Gotcha. You put in. Okay.
So like, if I wanted to, you know, be like Orange County Choppers and make my own wheels, I could make wheels in the CAD program and send it over, and then the five axis would cut the steel.
Gotcha. Okay.
So there's a program from Autodesk called Fusion 360, and it used to be free, but now you have to pay like a like one of those, it's a subscription thing. I think you get like a month free, but there's a subscription thing. But because I teach a course at Montgomery College, I get an education discount, which means I get it for free.
Nice.
And I'm kind of kicking myself because I've had access to this education discount for the past like 2 years or so, and I haven't taken advantage of it, and now I'm starting to say, like, I wonder if they have educational resources for this.
Say.
So I'm learning Fusion 360. I'm used to getting a program and going like driving 100 miles an hour. So like anytime I bust open a 2D painting program, you know, I figure out the brushes, layers. Right. I don't even care about layers. I'm there. I'm good. I'm good to go.
Right. Yeah.
ZBrush, I've been using it forever. Like within an hour, I can get you a demon skull. No problem.
Right.
Fusion 360, I go in there. I'm lucky if I can spit out the first three letters of the alphabet in an hour. And I'm just kind of like, I don't know if this is for me yet, but since I don't need to sleep, I'm going to kick it a little more and just see what I can come up with. Yeah, yes, Brandon.
Question, Jiminy Gucci. Hi, Brandon Chalmers, fucking Duocast. So what exactly would you be doing with this information?
So if I can model things in Fusion 360, I can send them to Jim's system more easily. Because right now what I do is I send him like my regular ZBrush sculpt, and then he has to take that into another program, and that program figures out how to turn my sculpt into machine paths that the machine can understand. So if I can model things in a CAD program like Fusion 360, that takes out a step and it makes his life easier. So instead of him having to do an extra step, I can send him files directly and he could just plug that into the machine, cut the steel, we're good to go. So
is that really saving you guys time in the long run?
I don't know.
I hate to be that guy to ask that question, but you spending all of this time to learn this program that sounds like it's much slower and clunkier than what you're used to doing. Like, if you're able to actually put something together in, let's say, reasonably a full day's work, right? Let's say 8 hours of off and on drawing, referencing, lunch, yada, yada. And you're able to come up with a finished product that you can send to him, and that computer program can then work and create something, even if it sits and it processes for 2 days. Is it technically lost time on his end? Like,
that's what I don't know. Like, I don't know how he gets my sculpts into machining paths. So I'm not sure if this is gonna save time on the front end or what. But the other advantage is, like, the working with surfaces, you can do neat things like chamfers and bevels and fillet. What is it? It's not fillet. Fillet? Is it a fillet? It's an F word. It smooths shit out. You put bevels on it.
Okay.
So it does a lot of the hard surface modeling stuff that I can do in ZBrush or Maya, but it would just take me like a couple extra steps. So certain things, the CAD works faster.
Okay.
I just have to get into it. But so, like, if I wanted to model a car, like some of those interesting curves that have like a curve this way and a curve that way.
Right.
And the math will calculate the in between. So it'll be like a smooth transition.
Okay.
Whereas if I had to model it, or sculpt it, I could get that smooth transition, but it would take me a couple of iterations of smoothing and then
smoothing. And then the numbers need to be right. And if you're going to end up making uniform across the other side, then maybe it doesn't translate if you invert it. And, okay.
So for things like, for hard surface stuff, anything with like, let's say if I wanted to model a phone, or if I wanted to model like a stylus or something like that, it's easier to do it in a CAD program because you know, this is a tube, and you know, you can use the math to describe this, and this is like a slim some curve and
Yeah, okay. And
so some of it makes it easier. So some of it I'll be using for like weird curvy stuff. Like I've built half of a helmet right now. So like I'm getting into
putting
it.
Putting that bitch to use, hell yeah, yeah.
I'm getting it. So and the nice thing is you can use actual measurements. ZBrush says you can do actual measurements, but I've had a lot of trouble dumping stuff out and it gets weird stuff. So like if I want a 3 millimeter hull, I can do that in Fusion 360. I just type it in.
Okay. So this is going to let you build real time, real world stuff. Mm-hmm. That's okay. I retract my statement and replace it with yours.
Yeah. So, and it's always good to know how to do this stuff. Like I can do vector looking things in Photoshop, but it's easier to do it in Illustrator, even though Illustrator took me longer to figure out than Photoshop did, which is weird.
Okay.
So it's like expanding my toolkit, I guess.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah. That makes total sense. Plus then people can start having you custom design metal things and that's always rad.
Yes. Metal.
Yes.
Metal.
Yeah. Anywho.
All right, Brandon Chalmers. So we're going to be talking about food today.
Of course we are.
Because it is the week before Fill Your Face with Turkey to avoid having to talk to family members day.
Jesus Christ, this year.
We're going to zoom in on a very specific place, though. But to get there, I need to preface it. So Rockville has a bunch of different eateries. I've talked about them ad nauseum.
Yes.
On the cast, in person, out the street. When people pass my house, I yell at them to go to these places. There are two places in particular that I wanted to preface our discussion with first. Iron Age and Honey Pig.
Oh, shit. Okay.
So Iron Age is a Korean barbecue joint that is all you can eat.
Yes.
They have a lunch menu, which is like $15, and then they have a dinner menu, which is, there's two versions. There's like the $18 one and the $25 one.
Yeah, but you want to go with the $25 one because beef.
Yeah, there's the $25 one. That other one doesn't exist.
You don't need that in your life. You're better than that. Spend the extra couple dollars. You're worth it.
The menu is gaslighting you for some reason. It is amazing. We go there often when we want to celebrate something.
Yes.
Or if we just need to challenge our body, because every once in a while, if your heart isn't pushed to the limit, you're not giving yourself a proper workout.
It's like weightlifting. Until you actually start really lifting your max, you won't know how strong you are and you won't be able to increase its strength. So I like to, on occasion, basically do some like some meat related strength training to the old ticker here, and really like, you know, check the valves, kind of do a bit of a speed test, a little bit of a dyno run, if you would, for your car friends there. Give a little ticker or a little run around.
Light the tires and kick the fires or whatever they say.
Kick the tires, light the fires. That's if I can remember anything from Harry Connick Jr., that's it.
Yeah. So Iron Age is great. Honey Pig, the way we're familiar with Honey Pig, it's also a Korean barbecue joint, but it's not all you can eat. It behooves you to go there with a large group of people because you order a tray of meat. It could be like $20 or something like that. So you want to spread it around to a whole bunch of people. Well, there's a Honey Pig that opened up in Rockville, and it opened up during the summer, and it functioned like most of the other Honey Pigs we've seen in the area.
Okay.
This weekend, I was driving past it for, I forgot why, but I noticed this large banner across the side of the Honey Pig in Rockville that said, lunch buffet, all you can eat, $15.99. Dinner buffet, all you can eat, $24.99. Which means there are two all-you-can-eat Korean barbecue joints near me, which is amazing. Which brings us to, how do we make non-Korean buffets not suck? And I want to drill down specifically to old-time country buffet.
Well, hang on a second, because I think you should also clarify this for the people who... Because I have a question, and then I want a clarification.
Okay.
So my question, and I assume you haven't had the opportunity, did you find out whether or not this is actually a buffet-style thing, where they make things like bulgogi and what have you, and then you have the ability to basically go to warming trays and then pull all the stuff off? Or is it like an Iron Age where you have the full Korean barbecue experience where you cook the meat directly in front of you at the table, everything is fresh, and it's essentially a challenge plate by plate?
I think it functions like Honey Pig. They just decided to switch over the menu to all you can eat.
Okay, fair enough. Let's make that assumption.
And I also forgot that there's a hot pot place near us that's all you can eat as well. And okay. You order stuff. But anyway, lots of great places that are all you can eat stuff.
Yeah.
Old Time Country Buffet, similar premise almost, except they don't prepare the food directly in front of you.
Yeah.
But how do we make Old Time Country Buffet not suck? Because I feel like... If you're afraid of Korean barbecue, if you're not into hot pot, you should have a good all-you-can-eat alternative. And Old Time Country Buffet, they're not bringing their A game.
I think we should probably tackle a few things. I should go on record as saying that I wholeheartedly disagree with your statement about they should have a good option. They should suck their shit up and go and experience Korean barbecue the way it should be. Not only is it a cultural difference, because especially at Iron Age, you're exposed to K-pop videos.
Oh yeah.
But it looks different. It's a different experience. The staff that you're dealing with isn't going to be some hate fucking 40-year-old. Like, just, it's just a much better experience. And it's part of the dining. Like, you walk in and everything smells like grilled meat. You're like,
oh yeah,
that's good. And then you're exposed to a bunch of sauces. You know, there's no steak sauce mm-hmm. at a Korean barbecue joint. You get the four different style sauces, and you're forced, no matter how fucking white you are, to deal with these four. You're handed chopsticks. You have to actively be white and ask for a fork. Like, and I think it's an important distinction here that an experience like Honey Pig, like Iron Age, like a hot pot place, is the sort of thing that you have to be of the mindset that you're willing to go outside of your comfort zone a little bit. Even if you're just brought in by, let's say, a nephew who seems to be a little more progressive than you ever thought you would be, and I drag you along because you love meat.
Yes.
You need to be able to wear your Sunday best. Don't show up in a fucking MAGA hat, but go in with an open mind and an open heart and be ready to clog that heart with meat. So, right. Now, to compare, though, an Old Country Buffet or Golden Corral mm-hmm. or any one of these other ones, they live on a staple that is designed very differently because their business model is very different.
Right.
It's not meant to be a community thing where you sit at the table. It's meant to basically be a challenge of subpar food that you can basically get picky about. Golden Corral gives people who are fucking monsters the ability to eat trash in copious amounts. Like, you can be that guy that goes into Golden Corral and be like, I don't like anything with flavor or anything else like that, so I'm going to have a big pile of mashed potatoes with white gravy with no pepper, and then I want it. And that's essentially how they work. There's no sauces. Like, there are sauces. They're fucking bland.
The Tabasco is like the most interesting thing there.
And Tabasco is fucking trash. I'm sorry if you love Tabasco. You're wrong. It's trash. It's just pepper sauce. Just put pepper on things and give me a proper hot sauce. I'm sorry. It is. So, like, to give an example, Golden Corral's gravy, their white gravy that you would put on a country fried steak, on anything that would be deep fried and served with big red skin potatoes, like that big thick roux, like sausage gravy style gravy.
Yeah.
It's supposed to have pepper in it. It's supposed to have a little bit of bite. That's the idea.
Yeah.
No, what they're serving you is essentially wallpaper paste. The ketchup, the barbecue sauce is burnt ketchup. Like, I challenge you to prove me otherwise. I am the meme of that dude on the fucking, like, on the veranda or whatever it is with the table and everything else like that. Golden Corral can't make barbecue sauce. Prove me wrong. Like, just, they can't. And I think it's a cultural thing. I think that the people who are going to a Golden Corral have established a couple things. One, they have given up the idea of quality. They are choosing quantity over quality. By walking in there, that is an active choice they've made. They've also given up in the sense of quality in not only preparation, but also taste over quantity. The kids can go and do whatever they want. Jimmy wants to go make a pile of mashed potatoes like Close Encounters. Fuck it. Just go over there, load up. I don't give a fuck. Just leave me alone. And I'm going to go hoard the tiny fucking popcorn shrimp or pretend that this steak is actually decent or like. So I think that's really the problem, is that there are no real. That's not necessarily true. I can think of one example where you may be able to do it. But, like, there are no real comparatives food-wise on a traditional American, like, bar-style menu or whatever it is that you could have to a Korean barbecue-style experience. You could do barbecue, but most American barbecue is slow cook based or smoker based.
Yeah.
And therefore the open pit fire doesn't really help anybody. It doesn't lend anything to that. And smothering everything in barbecue sauce essentially is like, why sit at the table and wait for them to cook it then? Why not just have the warming trays or have the pit master there or whatever it is? Like, you could do that. Like, you could have a, and I'm trying to think of the name of the place in DC that we always seem to go to that's a barbecue joint.
I don't remember what it's called, but that place.
But anyway, to give people the idea, it's a big open style restaurant. You basically get a card. You go up to the meat counter. You order however much of whatever kind of meat you want based on weight. The pit masters go in. They say, yeah, we've got this available. We've got that available. They make enough for the day, and then it's done.
They always run out of stuff that I want to get whenever we go.
We also end up showing up a lot later. So in all fairness to them, if we showed up probably around 3 in the afternoon, we'd have the pick of the litter, but every time we're at a convention, so that we don't get that option.
But that's why I don't think a barbecue, like that type of barbecue place would work, because in order to feed, like, let's say you and me, times like 50 came into that place and wanted all you can eat, they would be gone by noon.
You're right. And that's the problem though, Jamie, is I think that's the same issue. Now you find the same problem with Chinese buffets.
Ugh.
Most Chinese buffets are fucking terrible.
Yeah, they're disgusting.
And I can't tell if it's a quantity versus like there's no real there's no real way to pump the brakes on a Chinese buffet or an American buffet. And because of that, they have to lower the quality and they have to lower the food prep time. So when you end up making things in gigantic batches, it's rare if it's ever good. Now, you can do things like that with scalable things, mashed potatoes, most veggies, most casseroles, things of that nature. You can do fried chicken, things that are deep fried. You can do that with relative quality depending on who your food supplier is. But there's a good chance that you're not, like if you're providing fried chicken or something like that, there's a good chance you're not contacting a farm or finding a proper provider that's giving you proper birds, and you're not dipping the pieces individually, and you're not handling them with the same amount of care. So it's a real trade-off thing of like, you're basically doing the equivalency of a Royal Farms chicken at best by volume. Like, it's the best that you can possibly do would be, you know, a KFC style fried chicken. It's tasty. There's nothing wrong with it, but you're not going to have an experience there.
I see what you're saying. The only somewhat experience I've had at there's two American style buffet, like traditional American food buffets that I've actually had that were kind of amazing. One, there's a drag brunch in DC. I forgot the name of the place, which is terrible, but their spread is amazing. They have like thick cut maple bacon, and like, you know, they've got my brain's farting out, but they've got like eggs and bacon and like,
okay. So like a brunch buffet,
A brunch buffet stuff.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So do you remember what the price was for that?
I think it was a little bit more on the pricey side. I think it was closer to like $20-$25. And that's why it was so good, is because it was pricier and there was a drag show. So you had drag queens walking around and like talking.
Again,
shit.
We're f- we are back to a cross section of culture that cares about quality.
Right.
You're willing to pay more, and then you end up enjoying the experience that goes along with that, both by clientele, but also by show.
Yeah.
And the people who are going to go to Golden Corral are not going to drive into DC to go to a drag brunch. They're just not. And I don't think that they're willing to actually pay for the quality either.
That's true.
That's really, it is, for the lack of a better way to put it, as I continue to beat up on white people, it's a Mason-Dixon line of quality versus cost. Like, I don't think that they're willing to jump above that $15 line, because, like, if you're going to pay, like, you and I, we're paying $25 to go to Iron Age every time we go.
Yes.
We expect a level of quality. We expect a level of service. We expect it to be consistent. We have been given that every time, and that's why we continue to go back.
Mm-hmm.
You and I would end up going to a Golden Corral and we'd pay $15 and be like, well, I'm going to eat a fucking ton of something that I never get the chance to go do.
Yeah.
So, like, it becomes a volume challenge, not a quality challenge.
Do you think, given the style of food, the price point, do you think it's possible to build a better Golden Corral or a better Old Time Country Buffet? Like, I feel like...
No. Because here's my thought process with that to justify my point.
Okay.
Pasta.
Right.
Okay. Pasta is something that you can make in large quantities. You can make different sauces for it. And Olive Garden, the king of the never-ending pasta bowl, is responsible for such a thing. They have the most American-style equivalent to the Korean barbecue experience with their never-ending pasta bowl. They have a preset price.
And breadsticks.
And breadsticks and salad.
And salad,
right.
Yeah.
And the quality of the breadsticks, you know what? I can't argue it. The salad is fucking tasty salad.
Salad
I'm
is
not
on
arguing.
Point, yeah.
The pasta, this is where you start to get tricky because they're very selective about the types of pasta and the types of sauces that you provide.
Right, yeah, that's true.
So they cut down things to keep costs relative. Now, because of this, because the price is lower, we end up setting a mental bar of like, yeah, you know what? This isn't bad. It's not bad. This is a decent bowl of, penne and Alfredo sauce or whatever it is. And, like, we can kind of do the mix and match math of the never-ending pasta bowl, but we're not expecting a high-quality meal.
Right.
Now, here's the trade-off. I know you and I have been to pricey fucking Italian joints where we pay $25 for 6 ravioli. And
yeah,
pasta runs the gamut. For anyone who hasn't played at home, you should be watching Ugly Delicious because the David Chang episode about pasta is, it throws the gauntlet down against Italian pasta.
Yeah.
But this is a prime example of something where they managed to do it in as close to the Iron Age experience as possible, and it's nowhere near as good.
That's true.
You don't accept a level of quality. Now, I ask you the question, Jamie. Would you be willing to go to an Olive Garden and not pay $11.99, not pay $13.99, but pay $24 and get unlimited soup, salad, and breadsticks along with good quality pasta, lasagna, stuffed shells, things that require a bit of effort, but a higher price point. Now, you'd be willing to pay for the meal ultimately because, you know, you order the meal and then you get drinks and everything else like that.
Yeah.
$16, $18, you're going to spend that price anyway. So why wouldn't you be able to switch around to, let's say, a list of 8 main menu items? You know what I mean? Nothing, not like your chicken parms that require a ton of meat, but things that you can make in bulk.
Mm-hmm.
That require mostly cheese-based or ground beef-based things,
yeah,
that you can make a ton of, and then they can continue to make in large batches and then be able to manage accordingly and handle it that way. And then anything unused, they'd be able to basically refrigerate or freeze and continue to use the next day. I both know lasagna the next day is just as fucking good, maybe even a little better than the first time around.
Yeah, if you put a bolognese on that and if you put a pesto on that, I am sold.
But this is what I'm saying, yeah. Right. So yeah, that's the question, is why hasn't a restaurant like Olive Garden that has a built-in clientele, that is comfortable with doing the never-ending thing, that is comfortable with that whole process, why haven't they scaled up to a higher price point?
That's a good question.
It's because it's not fucking cost effective. It doesn't make sense. Fat people are still going to come in and eat shitty pasta, and they'll continue to do so over and fucking over again, and you can churn and burn. Mm-hmm. And the way that they keep you from eating a ton of pasta is they delay the refills, and they intentionally use smaller plates. So eventually, you just fucking give up.
And it's pasta. It fills you up, like...
Right. But, like, why wouldn't you go with a higher price point? Why wouldn't you go with a larger one?
Yeah.
Like, because they would be the only ones who have the infrastructure, the capability, and the wherewithal to be able to actually do it.
And I think they would make a killing, because...
I would finally go to Olive Garden.
Yeah, I mean, if I could get all I could eat, and there was a bolognese and a pesto on it, damn sure I'm getting a bolognese course, I'm getting a pesto course, I'm getting a bolognese course, I'm getting a pesto course, and then you're rolling me out of there because I'd be dead, but I'm paying that money, and I'm eating that pasta.
I would gladly eat... a lasagna, a stuffed shells, a pesto course, like whatever it is, and I'd be soaking shit up with the bread, and then in between courses or whatever it is, I'd be picking at this and picking at that, and like it would be a challenge to get past a couple courses, and I wonder if it would actually be a better thing. Now there's an argument of effort versus everything else like that, but like they're probably the closest one who have the ability to do that, and pasta is a scalable item.
Yeah,
but. As far as other American style, and I know it's a stretch for some people to call Olive Garden American style, but it ain't great Italian food.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I would call what you get on that menu more American style Italian than Italian style Italian.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I think that's really the only thing that you could have the option of.
And we would be talking like ones of trays instead of like when we go to Iron Age, we aim for 10. If we were doing all you can eat pasta, we would aim for 4. We'd be lucky if we got through 3.
Right.
And
right.
And why don't they fucking do that?
I genuinely don't know. Like, I think it would be an interesting argument to be had that like you do a never-ending pasta bowl, and then you do a premium never-ending pasta bowl. One's $11.95. Now, I think what the other problem is the price point to get into that level would be so much higher, because you would basically have to cover the cost of the food and then some, so it would have to be more expensive than the regular retail price.
Yeah.
So let's say a meal there is $18. You'd have to charge $23 or $24. And I'm not 100% sure that clientele there who has gotten very accustomed to buying meals in the teens is ready to jump up to that price bracket.
Yeah, that's a good point.
When you go into Iron Age, you expect that there's two options. You can be cheap or you can be expensive. They take all of the guesswork out of it.
There's not
really a menu to speak of.
Yeah.
Honey Pig, same kind of thing. Like, you kind of get an idea of like, okay, here's what I'm looking at. All the meats are relatively the same price. You can be a cheap buck if you want, but like, there's a good chance you're not going to get out of there for any less than X dollars.
Or go to lunch.
But you get what I mean. Like, I think part of the problem is the way the American clientele is wired. it's the only option that they could do.
Yeah, I guess people who go to those places just want to shovel it in their face and be done and be full and get the kids to shut the fuck up and run around or something.
I don't know. I mean, we're making a big assumption on the people who end up going to these places, but I've seen the people who go to these places. I'm related to the people who go to these places. Like, I get it. I understand it. Yeah. I'm not trying to shovel over them or anything else like that. Fucking pasta's expensive. I don't know why, but it fucking is. So that's just kind of how that works. They're not wrong that they shouldn't have to pay more than probably $14 for a prepared meal of pasta. You and I both know it fucking costs more than that.
Yeah. What if there was a breakfast place that did like a bacon bar where they did premium all you could eat bacon, and it was like the thick cut stuff or like the maple there's, bacon or like
there's
the,
places the there's a restaurant
stuff.
There's a restaurant in Baltimore called Iron Rooster that has basically like a never ending cup of bacon that sits in the middle of your table almost like breadsticks. So like and that's us pretty good, but like I don't know, it just breakfast food feels like one of those things where I wait for it to become a hotel brunch buffet on Easter.
Uh-huh.
Where you start to lower your quality.
Yeah,
the second you start to go, oh, they have scrambled eggs. Then they're in a warming tray. Then you know they're making a warming tray. You go to the omelet station. Okay, well, you know you're not going to get exactly what you want. They're going to rush it through, and it's not going to be very good. It's going to be okay, but it's not going to be prepared back in the kitchen okay.
Right.
Like, there's different threshold for understanding. People aren't patient.
Yeah, and it's and the eggs are going to come out in a huddle, and it's going they're not going to scramble them right in front of you.
I think there's a weird like kind of trade off where maybe there might be an option for this. You know what might be the option for this? The sushi place where like there's the rotating bar, and then you just grab the plates off, like almost like a tapas style thing.
You
end up eating American food. You stack them up. They count the plates based on color. The colors indicate different price points. And maybe there's an option for it that way.
Like an American tapas where like the plates are small, so you can up the quality a little bit because you're not trying to shove quantity down people's throat.
Yeah. They're doing, you know, American style chili dogs. They're doing skyline chili. They're doing sliders. They're doing American style finger foods. They're doing backyard style foods. It's traditional Americana stuff.
Yeah.
And it's in that rotating thing where like you can grab it and then there's a fixins bar or something like that over there, and you can grab whatever you want, and the things just kind of rotate around, and they just try and keep a certain amount of it done. And for the burgers, you do sliders, so all of them are done medium well. It's just kind of an understanding. It's cooked all the way through. It's a small burger. Nobody's going to be like, "Ew!" Like, there's an understanding of what's going on. You intentionally keep it small, so this way you can consistently cook it, and you can end up doing it. That may work.
That sounds good. Like having a nicely done slider and, you know, some like maybe double cooked fries or something like that. Or like
you do Americana style food. Like it can be, you know, all the things can be done in booths, and all the stuff can be in like the trays or plates or something. Like there can be kind of a fun way to handle it. And then you just stack the plates at the end of the table. And then when you call the waitress over, the same person who's been taking, you know, your drink orders and basically that, they just kind of tallied up and they go, okay, are we breaking the check up? And you go, yeah. And then you go, okay, seat one. And you just label the seats.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, you know, three red plates, two blue plates, one green plate. Okay, your total is going to be 23 or 24, whatever the fuck it is.
This would be a great concept for the future restaurant that we're building.
I know, right? Yeah.
So our premise, or your premise, is that the style of food doesn't lend itself to an Iron Age type experience, because the idea is to fill yourself, not to fill yourself with something tasty.
Yeah, like I think there's only but so many options for the filling yourself thing. Like you could probably do like an Olive Garden style never ending pasta bowl where you've got like hoppers of different sauces and then just a steady boiling thing of water, and you do like the little mini colanders or whatever it is where you say, oh, I'd like a thing of cavatappi and I'd like a thing of penne, and then they drop the two of them in and then they set a timer, and it's literally like it beeps, you pop them out, and then you shake them off or whatever it is, and then you dump them on the plates or something, or you dump them into hot, but like the table would need to be fucking gigantic.
And
it would have to, like when we went to go to Chicago and we ended up going to do the that big Chinese restaurant where they did like the Peking duck and the suckling pig, we're like, you'd need such a fucking huge lazy Susan to go around to be able to handle that sort of thing. It's just not space effective. I don't know how the fuck you seat everybody in that sort of place.
There is Red Robin, and they have two items on their menu that are all you can eat. They have never-ending fries, and they have never-ending root beer floats. I guess we've answered our own question. Like,
it's both the positive and negative of American style food. It requires a bit more preparation, and it doesn't lend itself to the way a Korean barbecue can, because it hasn't figured out the simplicity yet.
Yeah.
The Korean barbecue, based on what it really is very simple. You take a fair to great cut of meat, slice it thin or dice it or whatever it is, have a hot grill, lay it out, and then cook it to whatever you decide is the right temperature, and then provide dipping sauces. They don't play around with it.
Yeah.
Find a little bit of rice, a little bit of salad, and you let people pick and just kind of do the social thing. Like,
and even the marinades aren't that difficult. You just kind of...
No, it's really straightforward. They're in squirt bottles. It's pretty simple for you to understand. Like, you can go, okay, well, that's oil with salt and pepper. I can see that. Well, that one looks like a little bit of a blander paste. Okay, I'll try that. Oh, that one's got a little bit of red to it. That's probably got a little bit of spice to it. Like, mentally, you can very easily kind of do that math. And the other one, you're like, it kind of looks like a teriyaki sauce, but it kind of looks like a soy sauce. Oh, okay, it's more like a soy sauce. All right, cool. Done. And, like, by American standards, you can very easily do the math of, like, salty to spicy in varying rows. And they keep the quad simple where it's like, hey, moron, here's how this works.
Yeah.
It's pretty straightforward, and like there's something kind of for everybody. American food doesn't necessarily lend itself that way.
Yeah.
Like, just, it doesn't have that style of doing things. It's hard for you to be able to kind of do that rotating thing. I think that's why they almost force you with something like a Golden Corral, where there's a hopper or there's a station or whatever it is. You know, like, I think the nearest thing we may be able to do would be do like a hash station, like a hibachi grill or something like that, where you decide what's going to be in your hash, and then you tell them how many eggs you want on there, and then you've got three or four line cooks, and they're just fucking spatulas akimbo, just fucking putting hash together.
Yeah.
Hitting it up. That's an option. Like, that'd be a rad option for your breakfast place.
Yeah, like a Mongolian grill, except a hash bar.
Yeah, just a hash bar.
That would be cool. Yeah,
decide what you want. You pile that up on the plate. Okay, cool. Right, yeah, and or they just set a line of, you know, every one of them gets, you know, you pick your fixings. Every one of them gets two scoops of potatoes and two eggs how you want them. Mm-hmm. And that's just like the rule. Okay, cool. You know what you're getting into. So you go, okay, I'm going to put some bacon, and then I'm going to put some scallions, I'm going to get some cheese, and then I'm going to get that. And you walk over with your plate, and then they go, okay, cool, here we go. Right. Two hits of potatoes. They scrape everything on there. They start hashing everything up, how they're doing. And then as they're talking to you, they're going, how do you want your eggs? And you go, scramble. And they're like, cool.
But, bam.
Bam. Bam. And they're just fucking folding shit in. And then next thing you know, they, you know, you go to grab your, you know, the plate's sitting up there. Like you end up going to, what is it? The crappy, like, hibachi style place in the mall or whatever it is. Like two big spatulas, and it's like scrape, scrape, slide. They make the V, they splay it out right there on the plate, and they're like, all right, I'll see you later. And then you throw like a dollar or two in the cup, and then move right the fuck on.
Just roast
the next person. That's doable.
That sounds great. Actually,
that sounds really great.
That sounds amazing. Yeah. Like the hash bar.
Yeah, the hash bar would be a simple thing. You could do eggs that way too.
Oh, yeah.
So you could actually have two hibachi grills in two separate areas, hash and eggs. And, like, you get just two lines, and then you can kind of head down to where you are, and they've got, like, matching fixins bars, and you figure out what you want, and you keep it simple. Eggs are relatively cheap. Hash is mostly potato-based. If you keep your other stuff cut small and don't buy high-quality stuff, it's very doable in the same way a hibachi grill is.
And you have a list of specific eggs that you do, because, like, poaching, or not poaching them, but like soft boiling them would take a little bit too long, and poaching
them. We're not doing hard boiled. It's whatever is able to do, you know, scrambled, sunny side, over easy, over hard, over medium. You just basically have a sheet of how do you want your eggs, and then, you know, or do you want a scramble, or do you want an omelet?
Yeah.
And basically, like, if you end up doing it a certain way, like if you end up walking up with nothing on it, cool. You can order off of this menu. You walk up with a bunch of stuff on your plate. It's, you want an omelet or you want a scramble? Oh, okay, cool. And then it's super easy. And then in all the warming trays are things like waffles and pancakes and French toast. And you can get a little fun chicken tenders
chicken
and stuff
fingers,
like that.
Chicken
waffles.
Yep.
Like, you keep it relatively limited with those things. You get two sets of hoppers with identical things. You get a fresh fruit bar and you get a cereal station. And you move right the fuck along. And it's all day breakfast.
I'm there.
Fuck it. I think I may have just inadvertently figured that shit out.
Yeah.
That,
yeah. I think we fixed it.
We do well in America is breakfast. We're fucking great at breakfast.
Yeah. Hash bar, egg bar, bam. Everything else in between. I am there. Yeah. Like a giant bacon hopper. You can get the flappy bacon or you can get the crispy bacon.
You know who I trust to do this, and we should actually fucking send an email off or something like that, or do like a weird style pitch? Waffle House. Waffle House could totally handle this.
Oh, yeah.
How to make things in large quantities. They know how to continue to stay open. One of the most fascinating things to me, by the way, is the Waffle House Index.
Oh yes.
I don't know if anyone else is aware of this, but basically after a hurricane or some sort of like terrible incident that happens in an area, they judge how operational a city is based on how many Waffle Houses are open, because there's a fucking commitment level with Waffle House. Like, if you go back, they've got a situation room at Waffle House. There's a dude in that situation room who I want to fucking hang out with. Like, he looks like the real life Ron Swanson. That dude is like, he's a waffle czar. Like, all he does is make sure waffles are flowing. Like,
yeah.
Like, what are you responsible for? I'm national batter control. Like, that's what I do. I handle the batter. Right? He's like, he handles the spice. Like, the batter must flow.
The batter must flow. The
batter must
flow. He's the waffle Bene Gesserit.
Yeah, he's the fucking wizard. He controls what's going on.
Yeah.
But, like, I think I would trust a Waffle House, or maybe, you know, maybe it needs to be a kitschier thing or something like that. But, like, breakfast, I feel like, is relatively cheap. I'd love to see maybe a diner do this or something. But, like,
yeah.
I think this might be the way to do it.
Yeah, I think that sounds great. And then you have a big screen with, like, old style MTV music videos and stuff. And
maybe, like, I could see us doing like almost like a bull roast style thing where it's like a breakfast roast or something, and
yeah,
you set it up similar to like a bull roast. There's big TVs in there, there's sports, there's, you know, for every TV that has a big sporting event, there's a TV that has a sci-fi movie on, and then there's a TV that has a thing for kids on or whatever. Yeah. It is, and like, everyone can enjoy something on the TV. They can all hang out. There's fucking syrup everywhere. There's hot sauce everywhere. Like, honestly, you can solve most meals with maple syrup, salt, pepper, and Cholula. Like, I'm convinced of this. Kids, by the way, if you want to play at home, the absolute best way to top fried chicken, you take a bit of maple syrup. Don't fuck around with that Karo syrup crap. You're worth it. Spend the extra dollars at Target. Okay, get the real stuff. If you know a friend who lives up north, you get him to fucking bring that shit down.
Oh, yeah.
Because the real thing makes such a
huge difference. It is so good. Canadian maple syrup. Oh, my God.
Okay, so you take, I don't know, maybe a dollop is unfair to say. 3 dollops, maybe. But you want to get a bit of even coating going on there. Let it heat it up on the chicken. Don't fucking use refrigerated syrup. Stop refrigerating your syrup. Seriously, you're hurting yourself. All you're doing is making your pancakes cold. Anyway. So you pour that on the chicken, churn that chicken a little bit, and you take the Cholula, you toss it. I'd say comfortably, I like things a bit spicy, I'd go 6 tosses, just bam, 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 and then rotate it again inside the maple syrup. Sweet, spicy, the crunch is still in the chicken, everything soaks in, you can pull it off, and then you can dip with whatever's left in there. You're going to get those little bits of crumbs of stuff that's been sitting in there. They ain't running away from you now, son. They stick into that fucking breast that you're coming back in there for. Oh. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I earned this, okay? Know this shit. I earned it.
Oh, my God. That's so good.
Yeah, so good. A little bit of friendly advice from your favorite fat kid. Yeah, absolutely. Real maple syrup and Cholula makes everything better. And you know who I learned that from, Jamie Noguchi? From that weird Lincoln diner that's right near the Ford Theater where Lincoln was assassinated.
Oh, yeah.
He went there for breakfast. I ended up getting chicken and waffles, and it's run by a rather small Asian gentleman who looks like he's in his maybe early 60s. I told him, you know, I've never had chicken and waffles at a proper place. He smiles. He says, I got you. It's chicken wings, yada, yada, yada. He comes out. I look a little confused. I'm like, can I get the syrup? He's like, you want hot sauce? And I was like, sure. And he's like, you look confused. And I said, yeah, how do I go about doing it? He did the same thing, only he used the waffle as a way to soak it up.
So
he poured the syrup all over the chicken, let the waffle soak up everything else, then hit with the hot sauce, then rotated and basically pat the chicken inside the waffle. So it's soaking up all that goodness at the end.
Oh, my God. It was
a religious experience.
That's so good.
But again, I go back to, you need to expose yourself to culture. Take your white ass out of the Golden Corral. Go to the fucking Korean barbecue joint. Go to the tiny thing. Find the small Asian man. He'll be kind. You just play dumb. Don't be a dick, but just say, I've never experienced it.
Help
here.
Me. Yeah.
Or what do you suggest? Yeah, like, there's a reason why there's always... You go to a bar, and there's always a dude behind the bar who looks a little too weathered, who's a little tired of your shit. And you walk up, and you say, and he goes, what do you have? And you say, how special? And he smiles at you, and he goes, you sure? And you say, yeah. And you don't know what the fuck you're getting. You don't know what you're paying. That dude's going to take care of you.
Yeah.
You chip him a little extra in the beginning. You continue to consistently tip him through the night. And as the place starts to fill up, you can literally hold your hand up at the bar. He'll go, another? And you go, yep. And just throw a big thumbs up at him, and he will make sure you were drinking good the rest of the night. Remember these people. Food service is like that, man.
Yeah.
Be kind to people, take care of them, and you'll end up having a great experience.
Oh yeah. Whenever I go to a place that has like a small tip cup or a tip jar, I always throw some money in there because like this motherfucker's feeding me.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yes. And don't that's be amazing. That fucking guy who waits to see if they see it. They fucking see you.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
They'll hover around and be like, hey champ, that's for you, okay?
Yeah, no.
And stop. Yeah. Don't be that white guy.
Yeah.
All right.
Just put the money
they fucking
in.
See, right. Yeah, just like they give the change, figure out how much of the change you want to give, fold it up right in the cup, and just roll right along. They're gonna notice. They'll see you. You're good. Mm-hmm. You're gonna get taken care of.
Someone's feeding you. That's fucking amazing.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Someone is not only tolerating your fat ass, but they're encouraging your fat ass.
Yeah. All right, Brandon. Well, I think we hit gold.
God damn it, Jamie Noguchi. God damn it. Oh, that reminds me. So next week you are traveling?
Yeah, next week I'll be in San Francisco. So I don't think my aunt's internet reaches up to the flat that we're in. So it's okay. Like it's going to be if we tried to call, it's going to be like.
No, it's all good.
Yeah.
So enjoy family time. Let's see what else. Oh, after Thanksgiving.
Yes.
I'm still trying to find people, but if you would like to join me, traditionally, now Marty Day is traveling this year, to my knowledge. He will be leaving me, that son of a bitch. Every year after Thanksgiving, we do what's called Sheetsgiving. I gather together, we take a pilgrimage up to the Sheets in Harford County. We end up ordering terrible food post Thanksgiving and basically challenge our hearts similar to the way an Iron Age is. If you are local-ish to the Baltimore metro area and you would like to join me on my pilgrimage to Sheets, I currently do not have anybody to go with, but we will gladly videotape it. And depending on where you are or who you are, I may have you ride with me. We'll have a little fun. Maybe we'll go and listen to some Taylor Swift on the way up, and it'll be a whole thing.
Yeah. What day is that? The Saturday or the Sunday?
No, it's Thanksgiving evening. It's so, that Thursday.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we're getting back Friday. So.
Yeah, no, I'm not wasting anybody's time on that stuff. You already dealt with family and everything. This is an immediate right after, like, hey. You're looking for a way out of having to talk to your uncle after you've already had food. You know, the pie is kind of subpar. Sheets does an amazing whoopie pie. I'm telling you right now, you're going to be a happy camper. Yeah. Yeah. They do a pumpkin pie whoopie pie. It's delicious. Come hang out with your favorite fat kid. We'll go. We'll compare war stories. We'll hang out. We'll go and get food or whatever it is. Maybe we'll go to a bar afterward. I don't know. Marty Day doesn't drink. I've never had the opportunity. Fuck it. Maybe we'll just go hang out at Target and go see what sort of deals we can catch. You never know. It's a fucking adventure. Let's do the thing. But yeah, hit me up. It's at that guy Chalmers on Instagram. I once again give out my email address reluctantly. It's brandon.chalmers@gmail.com for anyone who's not paying attention. Just type Brandon Chalmers into a Google machine near you and you will find my ass. Jamie Noguchi, where can they find you?
Well, you're here on the channel, so you found me. I'm at Jamie Noguchi on Instagram, Angry Zen Master on Twitter. You know, you'll see my shit. Yeah, that's all. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving, everybody. Hope you eat a whole hell of a lot.
Be tolerant.
Yeah, be tolerant.
just for the day. I know. You just got to make it through the meal.
Yeah.
You just got to make it through the meal. I promise you. You'll be happier on the back end. And if it completely falls apart, just fucking buzz me and we'll just go eat terrible shit. It'd be great. They put fries on top. Like, you can get pulled pork with bacon and then pepperoni and then fries on top. Like, they treat fries like most people treat lettuce, and they spell it with a Z because it cheats.
I bet Chinatown is going to be open then. I might call you collect and say, hey, we're doing Chinatown Sheetsgiving.
God damn it, a remote location Sheetsgiving? It's a Thanksgiving miracle, Jamie. It's a Thanksgiving miracle. Yeah, really all I'm trying to do is make up for a terrible white ass holiday. So yeah. I'm going to do it in any way I can.
All right.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye, kids.